Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 3, NASDAQ futures down 27. Ricky, you got to kick the feed back to me a little bit. If you're Jimmy, you got to be careful what the settings are over there. Off the yesterday's record by a little bit, but not a whole hell of a lot, 2 points. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay. I think there's a lot of really interesting sort of things going on. In terms of the market, a lot of the other stuff that's floating around. I think one of the most interesting aspects of all of the the different the political interconnections with everything right now is how much of this is being driven by people who are finally starting to wake up to the idea that there really is no such thing as a total free lunch.
There is for some people.
Well, but they're not being, they're not doing this on, shall we say, a voluntary basis.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think that's one of the things that's kind of interesting is that it's, there's, and at the same time, I mean, here's an example. I've talked about this a lot, that so-called artificial intelligence is certainly artificial, but it's not intelligent. Okay. And in fact, the idea that it hallucinates, quote unquote, is actually false. It's trained on a data set. And when it doesn't have answers, it violates its own prime directive, which is the accurate processing of information without concealment or deceit. Okay, I mean that's what a computer does, right? It's supposed to sift information and if you go through Excel and you say, give me the average of this column, you get a number, right?
Well, if you're like me, you add them up yourself on a calculator and divide.
Yeah, but I mean, the point of it is that it's a deterministic answer.
Right.
It has a correct answer. Okay, and mathematics underlies all of the physical sciences. It underlies chemistry, which is a branch of physics. Physics is an exact science. These things are not, there isn't fudge room in any of this stuff. It's one of the reasons that I've said that this whole green energy nonsense is just complete crap, because all that is shoving externalities down some people's throats so that someone can grift off part of it for themselves and leaves every and it leaves everyone else in worse shape. All right. I mean, you know, you and I have gone back and forth on solar once in a while, but the fact is that if you take the externalities, because the first off, the panels are produced in a vacuum process, which is very expensive and not amenable to, you know, the kind of cheap mass production that you have to have if you're actually going to make these things in, you know, huge size. And secondly, they're doped with extremely dangerous environmental toxins, specifically arsenic and cadmium, all right, which means they're non-recyclable in any kind of economic way. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd rather not have any arsenic or cadmium in my drinking water.
Not a good idea, yeah.
Well, you know, that would be bad. And these things all wear out. Same thing is true with the lithium batteries that are in modern cars. The BYD is going to lithium iron phosphate, which is much more amenable to being recycled. But the lithium ion, you know, all the Teslas that are out there are using a battery technology that's non-recyclable. All your windmills, the blades are non-recyclable. You have huge amounts of concrete that, what the hell are you going to do with that when the windmill is, you know, no longer economically viable? I mean, there's
what do you
all
mean,
these
concrete you bust up and it's now aggregate.
Well, but it, yeah, okay, and then you have to spend the energy, the time, the everything else to do that, right? And by the way, it's full of coated rebar too. So you know, there's all kinds of stuff like that that go into this, and people say, well, but there's been all these subsidies for oil and gas and da-da-da. And that's true, right? I mean, there is currently I wouldn't call it a crisis, but it's an issue in that there are uncapped, particularly gas wells, that are all over the place. They get passed from company to company because nobody wants to declare them actually dead, at which point you have an obligation to cap them, to properly cap them, all right, instead of just putting a cap on the pipe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, nobody wants to do that because you have to pump it full of cement. It's expensive, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay. But here's, you would think that if you asked an AI, a computer sieve, to process all this stuff and give you some numbers, that you would get an honest answer, right? And it should be faster than you sitting down.
What do you mean? You have everybody in Washington trying to give you an honest answer on a bill on what it's going to cost, and nobody will give it to you.
Well, you got the same problem there, right? All right. So here is an example of this, and this is one of the reasons that I say that all of this BS that's going on in the market right now, the Mag 7, Nvidia, you know, Microsoft, Meta, you know, the billions of dollars they're throwing around. Oh, it's going to be the best thing since sliced bread.
Trillions. You're showing your age.
Yesterday, a blogger who I happen to know, not personally, I've never met him, we've never, you know, had a beer in a pub, but I know the guy's writings and he knows mine. He went after Scott Adams, who was shooting his mouth off about being the only one who made the call that the mitigations that were done during the crazy were stupid, and by the way, so were the shots. Okay. And he's completely, Adam's completely full of crap, all right? And so he went after this pretty hard, and he used AI to try to assist his writing, and specifically cited an article on my, that he claimed came from my site, and a specific quote that I wrote, all right? There's a problem. The article doesn't exist that he cited.
What does it say? What does an article that doesn't exist say?
The title of the alleged post is Spike Proteins, COVID, and Vaccines. That article, that it supposedly written on June 25th, 2020. The article doesn't exist. No article of that title was
from
ever,
you. It must come from somewhere.
No, it doesn't exist.
How does the thing make it up?
Chief, it was cited as being on my blog. There was no such article on June 25th, 2020 posted.
I get that part, but I'm saying it has to exist someplace.
Oh, no, it actually doesn't. And here's the thing. And also, cited a key quotation from the article. Okay? And this is what the supposed quotation said. If you were offered a vaccine against COVID-19 that's based on a spike protein, either in the antigen or the mechanism of generating the antigen, e.g. mRNA that causes your body to manufacture the spike protein, do not take it. That specific string of words has never been posted on my system by myself or anyone else.
I'm believing you. I'm saying it has been somewhere. Not even you. I mean, the thing didn't make it up.
Yes, it did.
You mean it's not on some off-the-wall site where the guy might be dead and don't even remember it or anything? It's got to be somewhere.
No, it's not.
You're losing me here.
All right, Chief. First off,
but if they say, you know, Kyle wrote the Constitution, and you didn't, well, they got it somewhere.
Well, you'd think. Okay, here's the thing. Now, this particular claim that I was strongly opposed to, well, that's true, okay? But the stuff about the spike, I had in the development from warp speed and everything else, I had very serious reservations from it.
You sure the idiots didn't somehow go through every time you were on the air?
Chief, they cited that the citation was specifically from my site with a date and a title.
We're two different pieces of chessboard. I believe you. Trust me, my friend. I believe it.
I'm telling you.
My question is,
I have every
it must be someplace, not on your site or someplace, but it's got to be.
Chief, I have every single comment that has been on my system that has been posted since 2007.
Oh, my point is, and there's no point arguing about it, it came from Joe Jamoke's site and somehow got your name on it.
No, it didn't.
You're saying it pulled it out of the air?
Yes.
That's one hell of a quote to be pulled out of the air.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And here's the interesting thing. Now, the actual seminal work on this that sent my alarms up was done by the Salk Institute in September of 2020, which is 3 months later.
I remember us talking about all this stuff, but I don't remember the sequence.
It was first preprinted in December, and I raised the alarm on it in the early part of 2021 because at that point it actually hit some of the servers. I saw it. Now I had raised a bunch of other criticisms of the development of the shots, having to do with their design, that they weren't statistically powered to prove that they could actually stop transmission, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
et cetera.
You and I talked ad nauseum about the tests they gave to them and all the different how the tests were horrible and it didn't.
There were all kinds of reasons for me to be all over this stuff like white on rice.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was, but this.
And I remember the tests in Spain and Brazil and how useless they were.
Yes, the point here is. While this is extraordinarily flattering, it basically marks me as a genius that saw something before anybody else in the world, okay, it's a lie.
Did you ever watch the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? When the facts conflict with the legend, print the legend, you're the legend.
Well, okay, so here's
just saying.
I'm just saying. This is, you know, look, you know, I wouldn't sue somebody over this because it's flattering. It's not defamatory. Okay. However, the point is, this was invented out of whole cloth by a so-called artificial intelligence.
You know way more about this than me, from my useless view of the world. I'll bet you a beer. It came from somebody's site, and they just attributed it to you.
There was no basis to do so at that time.
Because that's one hell of a quote. It's not a nice game, Joe. I mean, it's a real quote.
No, it's a real quote. But here's the problem is, at the time that this allegedly was done, the data was not there to support this. Not even on a speculative basis.
Well, that's it. I have a baseball question for you.
Sure.
What if you're a major league batter and you hit a ball, it goes down, hits the ground, pops up, and hits you right in the balls? And you're kind of...
Ow.
and you're trying to walk it off, and the umpire calls you out because you didn't get back in the box in time. That's what happened to Cubs last night.
Really?
Yeah. The guy could barely walk back to the dugout. They call him out because he didn't get back in the box in time.
Because now wait a minute. He was the batter.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's in the box. The pitcher throws a crap pitch that hits the ground and bounces.
No,
up.
I guess he swung. It was a foul ball came up.
Oh, it was a foul ball. Okay, so
which makes it worse.
Tip.
Yeah, it makes it worse.
So it's a foul tip. Okay. Yeah. All right. Because I'm like, wait a minute. That's a hell of a wild pitch to, you know, not just be in the dirt.
No, it was a foul ball.
But actually, you know, end up in your balls.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So they say, okay, you're not in the box in time. Strike three. And you had to walk back.
Strike two, you're out.
You had to limp back to the dugout.
Oh, my God.
you can't write fiction like this.
No, you can't. You know, I think, though, Chief, the reason I'm hammering on this so hard this morning, and I put an article up on this yesterday afternoon because this was just one of those things.
Well, every time I Google something and the AI pops up with an answer, you've educated me. I keep going. And some percentage of the time they're wrong.
Well, Chief, the number, you know, the number of times, so, you know, because Google's done that now. Okay, now here's another one that I also noted in this article yesterday. And this one's nasty. Rather than being flattering, this one's nasty. Someone I know who is a subject matter expert when it comes to various financial innovation products, i.e. CDOs, things like this. Okay. Of course, those were at the center of the 2008 blow-up, right? And they were in the process of putting together an article that essentially summarized the mechanisms and operation of some of these schemes that went into what happened in 2008. And they fed this information. Now, they're a primary source for some of this information. They personally are a primary source. They fed some of this information into an AI, and I won't name the one that was involved in it, but it happens to be from one of our Mag 7 Wonderkin, directly and indirectly, and it refused to produce the article that they requested. It flat out refused, and when challenged on why, it said because that is potentially dangerous or derogatory information.
You can't, when people like, who any of these people are that put these things together, be it Musk, be it anybody who decides that these sites are giving out wrong information that somehow or another, they just want, when they buy it, they just want to be the censor, Carl. Why doesn't anybody understand that? They want to be the censor.
Okay, so, but here's the problem that comes with this, okay? If you, when the, you know, I was one of the people that was involved in actually making the internet happen, right, back in the day.
Guys like you and Al Gore, you know.
Well, you know, unlike Al Gore, I actually pulled some wire and, you know, programmed some computers.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
Well,
I understand.
Yeah, I actually programmed some computers, unlike him, okay?
Yep.
All he did was push a bill. But the premise of this was the cataloging and dissemination of information in ways that was formerly essentially impossible. If you wanted to, you know, an article from a library, you had to physically go to the library or have them stick the book in the interlibrary loan system and, you know, send it to your house or whatever have you, right? And so this was a revolutionary thing. However, what has now happened, and I've had dozens of articles that I've been forced to move into the no advertising side by Google systems, many of which are running on AI, I'm sure. Some of them I know have been human censored because they're stupid in the way that they do things, and I can track where the referral's coming from. But and there's a backdoor API that they do not disclose. I know that too. I don't know where it is, but I know it exists. Same reason, because I can track some of this stuff. However, some of it is so-called AI powered, and again, the argument is it's dangerous or derogatory content. Never mind the fact that it's true.
Dangerous to who? To them?
Well, dangerous to somebody who's paying them.
Yep.
Okay. Now the now, for example, all the stuff I have talked about over the years about how I went from being a fat slob with a metabolic profile that was deteriorating, like three quarters of the adult population, to someone who goes out and runs semi-competitively on a regular basis, in fact, did so this last Saturday and will again this next Saturday, and with a completely normal metabolic profile and body mass, all of that is dangerous and derogatory. I can't discuss that with any kind of advertising posted against it, or my account gets canceled. All right? So these kinds of things. So now, if you want to know,
why is this a shock to anybody? Anytime somebody puts themselves in a position like this, where they get to filter stuff, either they're forced into it by people, or they do it themselves.
Well, so think about this though, Chief. All of this valuation that you have today, all right? The Nasdaq trading, the NQ futures are trading at 23.3 right now, and the ES is trading at 63.40-ish. All of this advance over the last several years has been driven by this mania that this stuff is going to come in and take over.
It's been driven by money in the system, and it has to have an excuse.
Well, and that's the excuse.
Yep.
Well, guess
but
what?
There always has been one.
Well,
it was click-throughs. It was AI. It was China. It was whatever.
I get that. The problem is the excuse is a lie. Okay.
Well, so is the cloud.
Hello. And incidentally, how much further does this run before it all blows up in everyone's face? Because this looks an awful lot like 1999.
You read the same article I did, huh?
Yeah. In 1999, I'm watching these IPOs come up, and they're claiming that between them, that GDP is going to have expand by a factor of 20 in the next 3 years. And I'm like, no, it's not. Okay.
Well, but that's the way everything is priced now.
I understand. Yeah.
I think it's, I actually believe, I of course don't have my calculations from back then. I think we're in some of these big stocks, if you compare them to the five big stocks back then, five or six, I think they're 20 to 40% higher than those were.
I think they're doubles.
Well, I'm looking at revenue per share. I mean, when I mentioned to people Nvidia, it's now over. It's down a little bit this morning. It's 170. I don't know why I keep picking this one because the guy, whenever he comes out in the air, the thing runs up. Oh, he's selling a stock, by the way.
Yeah.
At 170, I tell people they have $6 a share revenue. They look at me like I got 48 heads.
Yeah.
What do you mean $6? You mean PE? No, no, that's revenue.
No, that's revenue.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, what do you? I assume we have our other two guys, but I've been kind of intrigued on a lot of levels on where the Epstein stuff is going, and the levels I'm intrigued on are it seems like finally some people are starting to wake up, and the interesting part I wrote you guys last night, the more it expands, the more it becomes less about Trump.
Right,
he's in there.
I don't think this is. I don't think this is mostly about Trump at all.
Well, it depends on which level you're at.
Yeah, I get that.
If you go to the Democratic senator, but some of the Republicans have picked up on it. Evidently, he was involved in some double secret report on this a few years ago. I don't know if that was when Trump was in or Biden was in or somebody. These dudes uncovered 4,100 wire transfers in and out of one of this guy's accounts.
From one account,
one account, and like $1.1 billion.
Right.
And I think there's guys. I don't know if this is illegal or not illegal. All I know is, I'm really fed up to my eyeballs with every small brokerage firm, people going over every single penny of everybody. And to the point where they're up your ass, and yet other people. I mean, if God help you, if you sell a car for $15,000, a guy pays you cash.
Yeah.
You go to the bank. We won't take it. Oh, by the way, people probably don't know this, and they're going to say I'm nuts. Well, I'm not on this particular topic because I happen to know something about this. If you're digging through your old man's stuff who just croaked, and you pull out a stock certificate,
yeah,
God help you.
I know.
You're considered a money launderer because you have a stock certificate.
Now, when my parents went, guess what was in the bottom of their safe?
Probably stock certificate someplace.
I had all sorts of fun because my father had died and my mother was still around. And by the way, there's something we can turn into some cash to, for you to spend in your last few years, right? Was that fun.
If she had an account, say she had an account here, because this is not us, this claim from, first of all, IB won't take it. I mean, they just absolutely won't take it. RBC, I think they went an account that's been here like 10 years with $1 million in it or something before they'll take a stock. You would think that you own that actually, our creatures, be it Trump, be it Biden, be whoever these cretins are, nobody will have the balls to put on the top of the Wall Street Journal, by the way, if you have a paper stock certificate, consider yourself a money launderer out of luck. They put it on the clearing firm. And people are bitching at us. Hey, we didn't make this ridiculous rule. What do you want me to tell you? And yet, I know people that, so there's a lot of people who got maybe worked as a consultant. Maybe you worked as a consultant for a firm that's a startup, and you might actually have a stock certificate. Good luck with it. Maybe you can sell it back to the firm. But I'm saying,
my firm had stock. Of course, it was never publicly traded.
Right.
God forbid if I'd actually tried to, register that. Holy crap.
So what I'm saying, but if you have cash, yet at some level, what's the problem with cash? But what's interesting? I don't normally, but I'm sort of getting intrigued. You figured out my brain by now. Once I get on a subject, I got to keep at it, right?
Yeah.
So I must have watched 10 people with YouTube things yesterday. Bloggers and, people like us and so forth. Every single one has come out with something that the government didn't release, some picture, some interview, some police report from 10, 15, 20 years ago that seems somewhat legit. Everybody's got a little bit of a piece of the puzzle.
Right.
And they put it on there, and they show pictures of people. There was one, the guy was showing pictures of this beauty contest. But it wasn't really a beauty contest. It was a creep contest.
Yeah.
Where all these people, all these girls are 15, 16, maybe, in these scanty little thingies, and Trump and about 8 other people, some of them women, by the way, are sitting in a room, and the little girl come in and prance in front of them and smile and turn around.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going,
it's a creep show.
This is a creep show. What is this? But, it's, without, maybe I already did a lot, but you know what's weird, though, Kyle? I never saw any of that. I mean, here in Illinois. We were never, maybe in my little Irish Catholic ghetto. One time I went to Ohio to give a lecture, and I'm staying in this motel. I wake up in the morning, and I see all these young girls parading down, what do you call a bathing suit that's not for in the water, but it looks like a little bathing suit. What do you call those things? I don't know. I don't know what girls' outfits look like. I mean, basically, the smallest you could wear. It's a one piece, whatever you call it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. And all of a sudden, they come parading down the hall, and they're all like 14. And I go,
What the?
Yeah. And I said, what is that? And they go, it's a beauty contest. I said,
pedophile. Yeah.
These girls are like 14. Oh, yeah, well, you got to start early if you want to be in that business. I won't. But Texas is big on it. You hear about, cheerleaders have already been in 10 beauty contests and stuff. I mean, Ohio's big on it. I never saw it here, which isn't to say that I won't always peer on this, because I just didn't see it. I think it's a creep show. Am I just an old fart or what?
Yeah, absolutely, it's a creep show. And I mean, my problem with all of this stuff, as I've said, when the whole Epstein thing originally blew up in the media, I said the answer to this problem is actually not very complicated if anybody actually wants it, and that is trace all the money.
Well, funny you should mention it, because the next one I brings in and starts naming all these Jewish people.
Yeah.
And one dude was the premier for like a few months and way back, and then he was the head of Army intelligence. I don't know if he was head of Mossad, but And all of a sudden, his money's piled. I just, you know, I mean,
a few things
rile me so much is having 15 bank examiners staring at my crap because I happen to bring in $10,100 because I sold an old car or something, which I didn't do, by the way. And, and meanwhile, the Epstein wires are flying in the next account, and we leave those alone. Nothing frosts me more than that, than harassing the innocent and letting the guilty go.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know what? And there's plenty of guilty there.
You know,
I don't know precisely who they are, but I do know that it's not one or two people.
This is the first issue. God, Carolyn, how long that is, even though they're too dumb to realize it on both sides, this is the first issue that has unified the left and the right.
Yeah, and it's sticking.
Yeah.
It's not going away.
And it's both sides are like, either it's creepy or it's the money, or maybe Trump said he's going to let it out and he didn't. Now today, he's letting out all the Martin Luther King stuff.
Right.
That's going to deflect, even though the family. I'm sure there's probably pictures of him with somebody who wasn't his wife. You know, maybe.
Maybe of both sexes too. The guy was off.
I'm saying we can't wait to deal with this, and yet, the one was naming, you know, as a guy in business,
right?
Well, and you're so the evidently the Manhattan apartment. I hope we have Joel. We'll pile up.
Yep, he's up. Let him go.
Well, let me give me 1 second. Evidently, the Manhattan townhouse, apartment, whatever the hell that place, mansion, was bought and paid for by the guy who owned Victoria's Secret.
Yeah.
Now, who was that? His money? Was that shareholder money? I mean, what the hell? But the questions just pop into my head. How does somebody do that? Was it out of, you know, did he get his bonus and then decided to give the money to this guy, or was it company money? I mean, the questions are just all over the place, and people can't wait to ask everybody else a question, but these creeps.
Oh, I know.
And I didn't realize that his girlfriend who's in jail, she was a groper right with him. They both were groping the girls.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I never saw any lady groping young girls, but I guess I lived in a sheltered area. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. Carl, we'll see if Kenny comes back on. Joel, how are you? I haven't seen you in 2 weeks, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good. We should keep Carl on it and start a new segment, the conspiracy theory of the day.
We'd have to have a couple a day, wouldn't we?
How you doing, Chief?
I'm doing all right. The hits just keep on coming. This stuff deflecting, you know, and every time it is bizarre that every person now who's like at one of these little shows is coming up with a fact. And there's people that will show you police reports from 1996 that don't read anything about, and you wonder what is wrong with law enforcement. If you're the right person, nobody goes after you. It's crazy. Carl brought up
a
question.
I don't know if I want to touch that one.
Yeah, I don't either.
Just, yeah, but let's talk markets.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier, and I don't know if you were listening, that by one man's calculations, like mine, I think so many stocks are 20, 30, 40% higher than the big stocks were in 1999. I mean, in terms of...
I will just say that the momentum market lost some momentum yesterday. The momos.
Well, we finished at a new high.
You look underneath the hood, okay? Yeah, the big boys. It was the big boys. And even today, your Berkshire Hathaway's trading up. Your Meta's, you know, trading up. Your Google, your Amazon's, right? Some of those are on pre-earnings runs. But did you see the day that Robinhood had yesterday?
I did not.
And the follow-through. Did you see Circle downgraded? Did you see that move? Let's take a look at CoreWeave. CoreWeave just hanging out near its 50-day moving average. So look at some of your quantum stocks, what they did yesterday, big red bars. So the momos have turned here a little bit. So QBTS. So it's just something to be aware of. For me, going into value, going into Berkshire, you know, boring as it can be, fine, but definitely some of the momos. So if you're in those stocks and you're like thinking, oh, I should have sold so long ago, I should have sold on the way up, it may not be too late. We won't even talk about valuations because they simply don't matter.
Well, they don't until they do.
Correct.
My question is, in as I recall, digging back 25 years, 2001, when the high flyers cracked, the other ones didn't go down as much, but there really was no safe haven. It wasn't like if you'd have sold Cisco and bought X, you were up. You weren't down as much. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you hear this on TV all the time, and you guys don't say this on your show, but it's like, well, if I think the market's very overvalued, and by the way, it's due for like a huge correction, I should be buying these 10 others. I don't know about that. You know, if you think that's happening, I'm not saying it's happening tomorrow or next day, because it's gone on way longer than I thought it would, so I'm sure as hell not doing that. I don't know that you need, you can be anywhere other than in T-bills if something really revalues. And it's not like, okay, I'll sell my NVIDIA and I'll put it in Verizon and I'll be okay. And I don't know about that. I mean, I'm asking you.
That's been the stalwart of this market has been rotation.
Yeah. You know,
You're correct. You haven't seen those, you know, sell everything kind of days. There's always something perky. But, you know, we'll see how earnings season shakes out here. But yeah, I mean, the breadth of this market is, you know, you can say, you know, it's a concentration in, you know, the big stocks. The big stocks are doing okay. So like, I can't be Mr. Big Bad Gloom and Doom all time high as in, you know, when I see Apple up 50 cents, when I see the Amazon in up 54, I see Google having a huge pre-earnings run up $1.01. And this is speaking from last night's close.
Yeah.
Berkshire up, you know, so those are up. But then I look at, well, GM had earnings today. You know, I look at, so it's, you know, even MP Materials, you know, had, you know, has been having its day, right? Secondary at 55, makes a low at 54.80. Not calling for doom and gloom. I'm just saying, you know, rotation is important. And right now, we haven't had that. So now, Google comes out and misses, lowers guidance. Tesla comes out, lowers guidance. You know, and you have a sell everything day. We haven't seen that. And I don't expect it.
What, how much of, well, here's a question for you. And use it on your show. Ask people to see if they, how much of, when you and I remember today that if you wanted to put money in the market, and I'm not saying it was a better day, I actually like this better, but you had to go to, we weren't in the brokerage business back then, I was on the trading floor. You had to go into your broker and say, and you had all these people working for every firm that were analysts and, you know, chipping away at what they thought were the best stocks, and some people were really good at. So if you walked into, well, use an old term, Hornblow and Weeks, they might have had, say, okay, I want to, now your commission was more, but of course the service was higher. You'd walk in and say, you know, I just happen to have this, you know, $200,000, which is a lot of money back then. It's a lot of money now, but the not as much. And if you say, I want to invest in something, they're gonna, you know, Harry will walk out of the back room and he'll say, we've been following these 50 stocks. We think these three or four are a buy, and you might buy a couple hundred shares of each of those. And it's kind of what you did, all right. But every time you got in the market, it was sort of a specific event, all right. And I'm not saying good or bad. That's the way it was, right? Well, now you have, which I happen to think is a great idea, 401ks, people have IRAs, 401ks more so, you're just investing 500 hours a month, 800 hours a month, 200 hours, whatever it is, and you're going in big caps, because by the way, that's what's been going on. You know, you're putting the Qs or whatever you're doing. You're probably not putting an ETF, but you're putting in somebody's fund. It's, the investment is, I'm going to say the term blind. And if the same person, if you and I landed somewhere with him and had a beer next to him at a bar someplace, he'd say, man, I hate this NVIDIA, I hate Google, those things are way too high. Probably won't, but if he did, I want no part of those stocks. Oh, by the way, what are you doing? Well, I don't invest that much, but do you have a 401k? Well, yeah. Well, what are you putting your stuff in? Well, you know, I got it in whatever, the high-end tech or something. So in other words, you're telling us how bearish you are on the same stocks you put money in last week. Well, you can't look at it that way. Well, how should I look at it? It seems like there's a disconnect sometimes what people feel and what they are actually doing on a daily basis. I mean, they probably don't know that their investment the last week of their $500 was $250 in it, and the same stocks they think are too high. I mean, there's
kind of mentality.
Well, it's not a mentality. It's like a system. You know what I'm saying? That it's part of every day, every Friday. I mean, I assume people still get paid. Every Friday, there's checks dropping on mutual funds people's desks that have to be invested. So the down day is a rare event. I mean, something really almost has to happen for it to be a down day. Because if nothing happens for 4 days, there's all these checks where people are required to put them in the market. And, oh, by the way, if you put it in the market, you're investing in these five stocks. I mean, I'm asking, how much of what we see is just that? There's this constant money pouring in every day.
Yeah, there is. You know what? I think I'll end on this note. There have been points over the years where I've talked to younger people, you know, about investing very on in their investment horizon, and hard to beat the indexes, right?
Yeah.
Triple Qs or the S&P. And for the longest time, I said, just dollar cost average those indexes. I don't know what stocks are, to pick. You know, there's some stocks that take off and you may miss some of these things. I would say at this point, I'd be a little bit nervous saying that. I just where we're at in the market. So that philosophy's held up. It's paid off over the course of time. And if you're doing it over the long run, then there's going to be benefits, right?
If you were giving investment advice, and you're not, because you know,
nope.
If somebody was 2 years from retirement and has been riding this train, and they say they have
top off it,
they'd say
don't even wait for it to slow down. That's what I'd
say. I got 95% of my 401k in.
Would
you say pull some back?
I'd say get off the train, man. Everyone has to look at their own situation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's their
look
own
where
situation.
They're at. Look what their diversification is. And if you're at that point and you met your investment objectives, then I mean you could still participate. There's things you could do. I'd play it with a tight leash. But I've been saying that for a long time. So all right, Chief, I gotta hop. Next Tuesday.
How's the show going?
Good. Everything's going good over at Pre-Market Prep. We want to expand our free content. If you people don't know, we also have started at the StockTraderNetwork.com, and that is that's from 9 to 10:30 in the morning. We go right through the open. We trade the open. We have a special guest on usually at 9:45, 10:00. And then we do the same thing with the close. We look at the closing imbalances. We look at the stocks that are reporting the next day. We look at order flow, Chief. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Actually looking at order flow and some unique things. So, hey, everybody hop over there to the stock trade.
I've been a guest there a couple of times. They're good people. Good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Got some smart cookies. It's not just Dennis and I, but it's the group of traders that we've assembled in there. So hop over there, do a free trial. If you guys want to join up, I can hit anybody up with a coupon code. Email me joel@stocktradernetwork.com, and I gotta hop over there, Chief.
All right, buddy.
Always great being with you. We'll talk to you next week.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Hey, Kenny, how are you, buddy? He's somewhere. Kenny, unmute thyself.
Yeah, he's just muted right there. Just give him a second.
All right, he's probably up at the Cape, and since he's here, a shark hasn't got him yet, which is good.
I'm here, I'm sorry.
No, the shark missed you again?
No, there's no sharks where I am, but they're on other parts of the Cape, but not where I am, so I'm good.
What, do you got like a shark net out there, or why would they stay away from you?
No, I'm in the, I'm just off the canal in the bay. It's perfect. They just don't come in this way.
Yeah,
but anyway, what's going on with you?
That was
a very interesting conversation you just had.
Well, we're having, it's when it is when you've been around since before people did that. There's somewhat of this momentum, and the weird part is it works both ways. I mean, we haven't seen it work the other way in a while, but if all of a sudden everybody says, sell my spiders, sell my Qs, oops. Everything's going out with the bathwater, just like it came in with the bathwater.
Right, and that's always the argument, right? Is that it's a herd mentality, and everyone kind of follows each other, and that's what you get, right?
What other than being one of the most amazing things to watch and look at, from the lack of enforcement to the creep show to whatever, the Epstein stuff. At the end of the day, what does it do other than show that some people don't, you know, law enforcement doesn't come after them, and some people got a lot of money. Other than that, does it affect anything? I don't think it does, but maybe, I don't know, maybe it does.
Yeah. Listen, it's interesting. I just want to make one comment on the comment you just had with Joel. You know, when he was talking about getting a little bit nervous up here and all that stuff, and, you know, if you've hit your goal, you should get out. I would disagree with that. I don't think people should get out. I think you can adjust. But I don't. Even if you're in retirement, even if, you know, you shouldn't get out. There should be a certain portion of your assets that remain invested, working for you. You can pull back on risk for sure, but getting out to me means get out, sell everything. I think that's. I don't agree with that.
I don't necessarily agree with that sort of either yet. At what point? I mean, I was mentioning. I look at the five big stocks, and not all of them, by the way, are in this category, but.
Yeah,
I looked at them in 2020, and it seemed like the Oracles and the Ciscos, when they got to the top, now there's other reasons why the market went down, but they seem to have made it to this 11, 12 times revenue number. And then other things happened, you know, the Fed started pulling back on some money, I mean, all that kind of stuff that was an external shock, but it seemed like that was about as far as they made it. And now I see stocks that are way bigger than they were at the time.
Yeah,
Microsoft, Nvidia, Oracle again. By the way, that are higher than the tops were back then. I mean, Nvidia liked the place. I mean, they obviously are doing stuff, and everybody's on this AI. All right, their revenue is $6 a share, and the stock's 170. And I'm sitting there going, that's like way higher. Now they could be a very unique company, but somewhere, if it goes up another $50, and it's now $5 a share, and the thing's $220, or $6 and it's $220, or maybe it's even $7 and stock's $220. I gotta sit there and say, you know, I don't know what I'm doing here. I mean, it's at some point, I say you have to at least be worried. I mean, it's not just don't worry, tomorrow I'll be better. Even if it's momentum trading, which you're saying, you know, I see too many people, Kenny, that I talked to them originally about maybe managing money for them when they were working. And now they're retired, and their portfolio looks the same. I go, you've sort of changed here. What do you mean? I go, you got 90% of your money in the same five stocks you did 5 years ago, or when you were working. I mean, they have no idea what I'm talking about. I mean, the market, people change, and their portfolio needs to change with it. And right now, I mean, we started with, you know, the 0% interest rates. And I remember Joe Kernan saying,
I'm just saying that I don't. You know, when Joel says get out, I think that people take that literally and they go, they sell everything. I think that's a mistake. I don't think you do that at all, right? You have to change for sure. Your age changes, you know, your needs change, all that stuff. So you adjust your portfolio accordingly. But there's got to be a certain percentage of it that remains working for you in the markets, right?
I agree. But people have the mentality that when we went to 1% interest, and Joe Kernan, who I think is a buddy of yours, and he seems like a decent enough guy, said, well, the Fed is forcing you further out on the risk curve.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, Joe, but, geez, I'm the guy who's actually managing people's dough. I can't shove an 80-year-old guy further out on the risk curve just because the Fed wants me to.
Well, you can't, and I agree with you, but there were a lot of people, you know, that were older that needed to find yield, and they needed to find it, and so they did, right?
Right. Well, they find yield by investing in what worked last year. That's another problem, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all I'm saying is in a well-designed, and you know this as well as I do, well-designed portfolio, right? You design it for the person you're talking to, right? A 40-year-old portfolio is going to be very different than a 70-year-old portfolio.
Oh, yeah. But you know what's odd, Kenny? I mean, I hope you... We have a lot of stacks that we have concentration issues. We had some people, but unfortunately, they died. We had a bunch of people that were in UPS.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if you worked there, you got the stack, and, you know, they were up there. Yeah. We got the stack from one of the ladies. Kind of was 208. Now it's 99. You know, we've got ACN, yeah. Accenture. We've got a bunch of that.
Yeah.
We got that from people, 340, 350. It's 280. There's a lot of stacks that are absolutely getting their ass kicked. Underneath this umbrella, everything's doing great.
Right, but people typically that have concentrated positions typically have worked for those companies, so part of their compensation has been that stock.
Exactly right, yeah. Their basis is like 50 cents, that kind of thing.
Right, which I always say to people who are in that position, you need to diversify away because you work there, your retirement fund is there, you know, your life is there. You got to, while you get the stock as part of your compensation, it's great, but, you know, smart money says you need to diversify it away. I mean, listen, you and I can talk all we want about Enron. You remember that?
Yeah.
All the people, no, it's Enron, it's great, I'm never selling. These people got wiped out. Bear Stearns, they got wiped out.
What's the first thing they're going to tell you if you tell them to sell some of it?
What's the what?
What's the first thing they say if you say we need to lighten up?
They don't want to sell it.
No, they'll say, well, do you have an idea what my base is a buck? if I sell it for 200, I got to pay, you know, $40 in taxes. I don't want to do that.
Okay, I hear you. That's great. Then here's your other option. If you hit a rocky road and the place goes out of business, you're screwed.
Well, right? I get it. I mean, you know, we try and do something different and say, well, we can protect it by getting some puts and so forth, which is not the same as selling, but at least does something.
You can do that. Correct. You can do that. And so you can, you know, help earn money and do that. But I still think, when you have people in contrary positions, you really have to think about, you know, moving some of it completely away, right? Just because I think it makes sense.
Kenny, if you and I had a dime for every time somebody didn't make the proper trade for tax reasons, how rich would we be?
Yeah.
Right, because a lot of people just don't want to pay taxes. And
yeah, right. They don't want to pay.
And when's the last time you had a stock that was trading 300 and your basis is a buck? I mean, a lot of these people have.
I hear you. Yeah, I mean that it is a problem, but you have to figure out how to. You know, it doesn't mean you create the you create the action, you make the sale all at once. You would do it over a period of time, and you'd try to pair it off against other law, that stuff as you go along.
You also have this idea that if the stack hangs in there to like croak, my kids get it at the new basis.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I guess that's true. They do get it at a new basis if you hold it long enough, right?
As a Washington, New York guy that knows all these people, explain to me this, how we had yet another revenue bill, tax bill, and we still can't raise the $3,000 loss number that was the same as when I came into business.
That, for me, will forever be a question. I have no idea why they don't do that. Why the number is still $3,000 in the loss column? It's crazy to me.
When does that date from? 73?
I have not. Whenever it's from, it's not any time recent.
Well, because that was the number when I came into business in 81.
Yeah, and so it was mine too. I came in 1980. That was the number. So it was certainly well before 1980. You know,
it had to be like the Tax Act of 7. Wasn't there one in 73 or someplace?
You know what? In 73, I was like in fifth grade.
Yeah,
so
I was. We're not worried about taxes in 73.
Yeah, but one way or the other. Look, let's just talk about real quick for the market. Yes, do I talk a little bit top? Sure. Listen, the RSI, the S&P and the NASDAQ are both kissing overbought on their RSI scales, right? So that's just a sign of be careful. Don't go rushing in. Patience is a virtue. You can afford to kind of wait this out a little bit. Take the money you want to put to work. Put it in a government money market fund. You're going to earn 4.25% riskless while you wait. Because don't forget, you're also invested already. It's not like you're not in.
Well, plus if you do your government money market fund, I mean, we do a lot of that for people because
the market's just right. But the market just feels, and I've been saying this in my note the last couple of days, the market just feels toppy to me, right?
Yep.
And look, we're not getting these big reactions in these earnings numbers. You're not getting massive reactions. Actually, you're getting stocks that sell off even on a good earnings number. Because I think that just suggests to me that people are just a little bit nervous again about, you know, kind of a volatile summer as we move through August. and into September. Still unsure what's going to happen on August 1st with tariffs and what's that going to do. I don't think it's going to be an April type reaction, but do I think we could see a pullback for sure? Especially if they don't make a deal, right?
Well, key question here: we have the 30-year rate has made it to 5% now. I'm counting 4 or 5 times.
Right.
Every time it comes back down, I don't know if the Fed's a buyer there or what's going on, or if it's just, you know, it's not ready to go through there yet or ever. If Trump succeeds at either replacing this guy and or buffaloing him to where he lowers the short-term rates, I have to believe that the long-term rates go up right afterward. I don't know. That's just my read of it. What happens in the market if that number gets to 7?
I think the market's going to have a really tough time. Look, I think if it goes over on the 30-year rate, if it goes over 5 and stays over 5, the other issue is it's tested it. We've kissed it. It's backed off. Yep. It doesn't seem to make it through. I think if it makes it through, like if it goes to 5.10 or 5.20, I think that already presents a problem for the market. If it goes to 7, it presents an even bigger problem for the market. I don't see that happening right now, but I do suggest I'm kind of planning for the 5-year to be in that 5.25% range. So far, it hasn't happened, but you know, in my mind, that's kind of what I'm preparing for, right?
Well, somewhere in this thing, and I had John Flanagan was on yesterday, and you know, he's kind of agrees with everything the administration does. I don't quite know why, but if somehow or another we've got the attitude that if we put some of these other countries into a recession, it's good for us, or we don't care. I mean, they're a bunch of idiots anyway. They never like this. We don't care. And I don't quite know where that attitude comes from, but I don't. My economic background says if they put other people in a recession, it never really works good for you. It's not like it's an incremental thing. But all, especially when some of those people are showing up to buy the treasuries. We don't like Japan at all. Okay, well. They're our highest contributor, right?
Yeah.
And China's second. So you got to be a little careful of what you do, because you sort of need them on one end. I mean, we're also tied together. That I don't. I get the sense that people aren't necessarily up on the subject that the world is pretty tied together right now. Which doesn't mean that somebody's not screwing you and you got to screw them back or something. I'm sure that's happening, but. Just this general idea that it's us against them, I don't know if this is the time for that. I mean, they were talking about what Britain had their second quarter of decreased GDP.
Yeah.
Now, if every one of these countries starts to do that, the idea that it's somehow accretive to us, I'm not sure where that message is coming from, especially if those are the guys that are investing because we have so much debt. Somehow or another, if they don't show up, and we have to borrow this money here or raise taxes even more than the tariffs are, what does that do to our economy?
No, I hear you. And so that's the question. What does it do to our economy? And that's kind of what people are waiting for, right? You have to, there's been this argument that, you know, tariffs are going to already have destroyed our economy. That hasn't happened yet. Although let's see what happens now if August 1st is really the hard and fast deadline. I'm still in the camp that I think they're going to kick that can down the road if they don't come to a complete agreement, because they'll say that, well, we're making progress and we don't want to screw it up, and they'll kick the can down the road a little bit.
Well, I mean, the promise of a lack of enforcement is never an excuse for a bad law, is it?
No, no, it is not. 100%. It is not.
I mean, it is kind of stunning to me that, the tariffs are going to help they're going to help the deficit, right? I mean, they're essentially a tax. I mean, it's even hard to sometimes it's even hard to explain that to people that it's a tax on you.
Yeah.
But it is, and I don't think it's going to be the number that the administration says, which is $600 billion. I don't think it'll get there because A, they'll push it off and do some other stuff, but it's not nothing, and it's. I had three or four people on the show, Kenny, tell me because of the last month's CPI, which was up a little bit. See, the tariffs aren't. One thing I know for sure, and I don't know why, is the CPI is about a 3-month lag to it.
Right.
We're not going to if it's starting to affect prices, which I think it is. That's on some stuff anyway. We're not going to see that till probably. I'm going to guess September.
Yeah.
And we might get a shocker if they come through with a real number.
Right.
I mean, it's percolating. I mean, just by design, if it was a sales tax, it would not affect CPI, right? Because they don't count that.
Right.
But a tariff comes in first, and it's going to affect CPI, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it has to affect.
Right, but so far we haven't seen that. Although we haven't seen the implementation of 30% tariffs yet. So let's just see what happens. I think you have to kind of wait and see. I don't think you're going to get 30%. I think you're going to get tariffs somewhere between 10% and 20%. And I think that's kind of what the market's telling you as well. I think the market's telling you it's not expecting, tariffs to disrupt the economy.
I think
so. Or going to be overly excessive.
Oh, man, you know what I just saw, Kenny?
What?
Somebody went by my window and he said, "So far, so good." just saying.
You're nuts.
Right, listen, isn't that sort of what we've been talking about, though? So far, so good.
So good.
So are you, how long are you up on the Cape? Hope your weather's better than here. It's hotter than hell here.
Yeah, no, the weather's been kind of mixed, right? I've been here since July 1st. I'm leaving on the 30th. The weather's been mixed, it's kind of been soupy and gray and overcast for half the time I've been here. And today's an absolutely stunning day. The sky is blue, the water's calm and clear, and it looks like a beautiful day.
So what do you guys do? Are you sailors, or do you just go to the beach, or what, or none of that?
So yes, I am a sailor. I grew up not in a big sailboat. Like I would sail like catamarans, right? That's where I grew up.
Oh, cool.
Right, boating. I grew up boating and water skiing and do a lot of stuff, and just being in the water for sure is what I'll do. We'll go fishing, and in the fall we'll go scalloping.
Yeah, one of my buddies from school his parents had a place in West Dennis.
Yeah.
They had a little sailboat, and we went out one day. It was so cool.
Yeah, West Dennis, it's beautiful.
They were right on the, where the beach is in West Dennis? If you walk toward the end of the beach, where the cars come in and you can actually walk in, if you made a left turn on that little inlet, they were the third house in.
Yeah.
So all you had to do is walk out, walk down the street, walk on the beach, or else the inlet, the sailboat was out in the back, totally protected from the tides came in, but you just scuttled down the thing into the river and out you went. It's pretty cool.
Listen, I grew up here, so for me, it's like when I come from either Florida or New York, whatever, it's like coming home for me. And we're right at the mouth of the Cape Cod Canal. Straight across would be Woods Hole, which takes you right through Woods Hole and out to the Vineyard or Nantucket. That's, I can get to Martha's Vineyard in about 45 minutes, and I can get to Nantucket probably in about close to 2 hours.
So that's by boat, obviously, right?
Yeah, by boat.
Did you ever go to the Barnstable House?
I've never been to the Barnstable House.
My buddy used to be the drink manager there, and the place is supposed to be haunted. He said once in a while, some bottle would just fall off the bar.
Yeah, Barnstable's funny. There's a lot of those ghost stories in Barnstable. I don't know why, but...
Maybe because they got a lot of ghosts.
All right, listen, let me jump. I'll talk
All right, take care of you, buddy. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Buddy, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
Yeah,
doing well.
The market, market's up. A lot of stuff's up. What the hell?
Well, saying the market's up in the age of the inflationary central banks is like saying the sun came up.
Yeah, but
that's what they want.
Everything's
that's what inflation does.
It doesn't take
boost stocks. It boosts home prices and Bitcoin.
Doesn't take everybody with you, though, does it?
Well, it doesn't take everybody with you. That's true. And sometimes something happens to the sun rising. We get a period of where the Fed pulls back and but over the long run, if you look at it, you look at home prices, bank lending, that's what the Fed does. The Fed makes the sun rise every morning. It in my opinion is what's causing the situation in the stocks that you were talking about earlier with Carl.
Yep.
It's causing that. I mean, back in 1999, that's kind of funny when you mentioned the word 1999, I thought of Prince, and in high school listening to that song.
Yeah.
And I thought, 1999 was like way far too in the future, just so far in the future that it amazed me that we would never get there. And here it is, what, 25, 26 years later?
Yeah, well, I was on a...
That partying is over, right?
Well, when I was on the SIBO board, I was there from 92 to 98, right? And all we started talking about was, you know, the Y2K stuff with the computers. And we started talking about that in, I'm going to say 93. I ended up on, like, the Y2K committee. It was like an old Western movie. You know, who wants to volunteer for this? And everybody else stepped back, and there I was, type of thing. Because I didn't know anything about any of this stuff.
What was the banking industry?
Was it what?
When you watch reports on the news, you kind of get the feeling that everything's a catastrophe about ready to happen. From my perspective, I was finishing up a math degree, and I was about ready to go to my PhD. I really saw nothing. I didn't experience anything in terms of Y2K, other than maybe the labor market shifted, right? But were banks really seriously worried about it?
Oh yeah, and I'll tell you why. The
well, I mean, it was a real thing, right?
Well, it could have been, you know. I think, but again, I don't mean computers, but what I know for sure, because I was with a lot of smart people, is way back in the day, some of your old codes, like I'll give you a quick story. The CBOE trade match system. What do you think that was designed from, or actually was a takeoff of, or they stole it? What do you think it was? Like you matched.
Well, I don't know.
It was the United Airlines ticket system.
Oh, really?
Because the United Airlines had the world's biggest system of essentially matching people to seats on the plane. That's what they did. They matched people to the flight and the seat, right? So when the trades came in, when people started to trade options, how do we match the two people that made the trade so that we know who the two people that did it and how they went to the clearing corp and cleared? They picked up the United Airlines trade match system. Essentially, seat match system became the trade match system. And over a period of time...
Now, did they buy it? Or did they...
I think so, yeah. I mean, I don't know who... they probably did or rented it. And so over time, of course, more and more stuff started to happen. And even though this was the basis of the trade match system, the story always was how many contracts can you trade a day? Was always the what if we traded 100,000 contracts? Could the system handle it? Well, after a period of time, the trade matching became such a small piece because now you're putting out quotes, and now the quotes are being there's a million quotes going on an hour. Now that became the place, but the early stuff, and from what the guys used to tell me, in some of the codes, the date was in there like every 10 lines. And they would shorten up the date to where, because when they started writing the stuff, it was the 70s, right? It was 74, 75. But then when it got to 99, the rollover would be to zero. And everybody felt, what's going to happen? All right? And so you had that issue. But people kind of recognized it early, and what ended up happening is you had places like the CBOE and the banks and everybody. CBOE was right on it. I mean, they were really a good organization. And what we ended up doing is all the future changes and upgrades we're going to make to the system, we essentially pulled them forward. And we did stuff in 95 that maybe we wouldn't have normally done until 97 or 98.
Yeah.
So you essentially did your and everybody did this. But the other stuff that was even freakier, though, Hal, is on the trading floor, there were enough phone lines there. There were more phone lines than like a town of 50,000 people or something. I mean, it was incredible the communications that was on a trading floor. I mean, everybody had a phone that had like 12 lines on it. But every one of those handsets had chips in it. And the chips that are in the handset might have been designed for something more than a phone, but something was wrong with the chip, so they became like a second. So every phone had a chip in it. And you had no idea what the programming was in that chip. So the second question was, even though all the systems might work, would everybody's phone shut down, or half the phone shut down? And you really didn't know, right?
Yeah.
And the Fed didn't know for sure how they were going to, well, people were going to react. So they pumped a lot of money in the system that year, which the market was going up anyway, so it made things even, let's say it accelerated the market. And the idea being that everybody's going to want to take out how much money in cash, you know, in December in case something happens, so you have enough cash to last you till February, till the world fixed whatever was going to break, right? So people took a lot of cash. But there were genuine concerns that, you know, they were legit. But then when it actually happened, people, I'm going to say it was 80% preparation and 20% maybe it wasn't as bad. But I have no doubt that if the SIBO just ignored it and didn't do anything, that they would have had a problem. I mean, that's my belief after being on those committees. But I couldn't tell you how much of a problem, or if one problem in one place would make it through the rest of the places, or would be, because you couldn't tell if you had a problem, it was going to be isolated or not. You know, we knew that if one phone handset didn't work, it probably was just a phone handset. So we weren't all that worried about that, because there were so many extra phones on the floor. People didn't have cell phones in those days, so it wasn't like you could just use your cell. I mean,
people had pagers.
Then it was okay. What if Smith Barney system went down, and they couldn't put orders in? Then what does that happen to Smith Barney and their clients, and does it reflect on them or to SIBO? I mean, once you start talking about the problems like that, it starts to, you know, it's like a stone in the water. The waves keep going. But every year, we would say, normally we were going to redo this system in 2001 or something. Well, we did it in 99. And code we had, we either isolated the code that still had the dates in there, or we redid it early. And we were going to do it anyway, but and a lot of people handled it like that. It wasn't like 10 years before people didn't recognize you might have a problem. And I think,
When you watch the movie, Space, you get the feeling that, you know, the comedy's based on that and the plan hatched by Richard Pryor's character in Superman.
Yeah.
Where he's going to harvest all those, partial pennies.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that was a big scam, by the way, when
banks went computer, that was a big scam at every bank. You took.
Oh, really? So that was
real.
Fiction followed reality.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what we're talking about is when you were a say you were in a credit union or a savings and loan, you brought your passbook in. They would essentially go through the book way back when, or else maybe their internal computer system, and they would calculate the interest and they would, round the penny. Okay, but now when the banks, everything started to become computerized, and you get, Hal gets $48.73 this month interest. Well, some knave said, why don't I take the 3/4 cent, since we're not giving it to Hal, and I'll dump it in my account. And all of a sudden, the first people who did that made like a lot of dough in the first couple months before people caught it. I mean, because we're talking about, you would know, how would you know the difference that they rounded the penny? I mean, a rounded penny went in somebody else's account. I mean, it was, these scams were real. But then once somebody caught the first scam.
I was young when that was probably going on. I was in high school, probably not paying attention to that. Were these reports being reported by the media?
Once somebody got caught, then every bank started looking at it. But I mean, but in your credit union, my stepfather was, he had another guy ran the credit union, St. John Fisher. If you went in to get your interest, they would calculate it, and if it was 48.8 cents, they gave you 49, and if it was 48.2, you got 48. I mean, they rounded it up or down like you would in any math class. But what somebody said at the bank, wait a minute, let's not round it up or down, let's just take it and shift it to another account. Now, how how somebody didn't realize that 90 bazillion, .002 cent things are going to an account, I mean, what the audit procedure was on that or wasn't, it's sort of like the Epstein files. How did all this money fly through here? Nobody noticed it while they're bitching about Hal's $10,000 in one cent because he needs to put a, he needs to fill out a form because he's a crook. And how that happens right next to them bitching at you is kind of my beef on the whole thing, right? You let some people they let go, and some people they don't. Could you imagine the amount of transactions that were going into somebody's account when every time, if a bank had a million even 100,000 people, and every month there's 100,000 pieces of a little penny going in there, and nobody noticed it. How could you not notice it?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You were saying something about Epstein. Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned the Epstein thing. I was listening to a podcast, and you guys mentioned podcasts.
God, they're all over, aren't they? The podcast.
Yes, with Daryl Cooper. He's this every person historian. Most history is written from the perspective of the king who wins, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
His story. But Daryl Cooper, what he does, and he's accused of being all kinds of hateful people. I mean, he's accused of being a Nazi, anti-Semite, you know. But what he does is, the way he approaches history is he wants to learn the events of the past from the perspective of the victors, of the losers, of the rich, and of the poor. And I was listening to him on a podcast talk about Jeffrey Epstein. The dude got a job teaching math after he dropped out of college at Cooper Union. He got a job teaching math at a New York City high school called the Dalton School, which is really elite, teaching mathematics. The guy that hired him...
Oh, I hope he had a good textbook.
...wrote novels. The guy that hired him wrote novels, and guess what the novels were about?
I have no idea.
They're about the kinds of things he's accused of doing.
God.
Basically, pedophile rings. And guess who the guy that hired him at that school, guess who his son was? Bill Burr. The guy that claimed that Epstein committed suicide before any investigations were conducted. And Burr was the Attorney General under Bush 1.
Are you?
Who was basically...
Are you in the... It wasn't really a suicide camp, or are you in the he's not even dead camp?
Yeah, I think he was... I think he hung himself like the guy that overdosed on aspirin, or the UN guy that dropped a barbell on his neck.
Or like the Russian guys that just happened to fall out of windows.
Yeah. that's about as
you got. You got the thing I sent you last week about yet another oligarch fell out of a window, right? Was that 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't fall out the window.
No, I don't think so.
he quote-unquote fell out the window, quote-unquote.
Yes. He lost his balance just right by the window, just happened to be open.
Yeah. It wasn't the guy. It wasn't the you don't see the guy pushing him. that Jeffrey Epstein thing is crazy, because he got fired for apparently... he got fired from the school for apparently... fraternizing with high school female students at high school parties. And then he didn't get fired. He kind of like changed jobs. He got a job at an investment bank. And he didn't get fired from the investment bank after 3 or 4 years. He was really good at like money laundering. So then he was kind of like horizontal.
Stop for a second.
Right.
From a guy who...
Right into an arms dealer.
For a guy who's, you know, the major shareholder of a brokerage firm and an investment advisor firm, how the hell could I hire somebody and how could you learn to be good at money laundering? We can't money launder anything. I mean, what if you open up an account, we got to check you at Interpol. How do you go to an investment banking place and learn how to either learn or teach other people how to money launder? How do you even start doing that?
I think, Tom, you and I have just a different moral code. There are people that are just inherently good at stuff like this. I mean, I have a relative who is really good at taking money off of people in a way where he's not getting to get in a fight when they're playing pool. There are people that are just really good at it. My wife has a Haitian relative who run a numbers game up and down Flatbush Avenue. There are some people that they have personality capital. They're quick at figuring, and they find ways. It's like, you know, I'm building this history of economic theory course, and I'm going through the developing a modern macro, and there's basically two camps. There are the Budinskis and there are the Budowskis, and the Budinskis are the Keynesians, the new the neoclassical synthesis, and the post-Keynesians, they're kind of the Budinskis. They say that policy intervention is good, whether it's fiscal or monetary. And then you have the Budowskis, who are the monetarist, the new classical school. They're the They're saying that policy doesn't work for the most part because markets work. The Keynesians say that prices are sticky, wages are sticky, and so you need government to intervene. I kind of side with the Budowskis because I think markets work. And the reason why the Keynesian paradigm works is because government is creating restrictions. They're creating subsidies that create moral hazards, whether they're at the corporate level or the individual level. And that creates rigidities. Are you going to get a job? If you lose your job and you're enrolled in a benefits program, whether it be unemployment insurance or food stamps or whatnot, are you going to look for work immediately if you're getting those kinds of benefits?
Well, yeah.
Some will.
I would. I did.
Some won't. Some won't, right?
Yeah,
some will write it out.
But your unemployment's never as much as you were making unless you're some kind of schlump.
Well, I know, but some will look for work immediately. Some will write it out. If you're waiting to go to college, like I was when I got out of the Navy, I wrote it out. If I wasn't going to college, I wouldn't have wrote it out. I wrote out my unemployment benefits because I was going to roll in college in about 3 or 4 months. So I kind of wrote it out. I also got enrolled in a program called JTPA. It was a program to get Navy people or people just discharged from the military, you know, job skills so they can get work. And I used mine to go to an automotive school at Lewis Clark State College. I took the full load of automotive mechanic courses, and I took a full load of academic courses and paid one tuition. So I was getting an automotive certificate at the same time I was finishing off a business degree.
If you
and I was refereeing basketball on top of that.
Well,
I rode that program out, right?
It was so long ago that if you have a job and you get canned and you're on unemployment and you say you're on unemployment for, well, it's 6 months normally, right? Unless there's a problem and the Fed piles. I think it's 6 months. If you pile into a full load course and whatever, becoming an automobile mechanic, does that satisfy the looking for the job part or not? I mean, and I'm sure people can lie about that, but if you don't, if you're straight, if you used to have to walk in and actually tell them that you had a couple interviews.
They bought me.
But I mean,
I wasn't going to break the law. I wasn't going to break the law.
I guess my question is, and I don't know, maybe if some listener does, they can pipe in. If I say, all right, I got laid off here, but I really want to be an auto mechanic, and I go to Moraine Valley and I take 6 months of, you name it, brakes, ignitions, or whatever. So the idea that when I get off my unemployment, I'm gonna have all these certificates and I can get a job real easy. Does that count as looking for a job? I don't know that it does. I mean, I don't know the answer.
I don't think it does. I think with unemployment insurance, with unemployment insurance, my experience is you have to look for at least three jobs a week, and you have to document it. And I did that. I documented every job I looked for. But the unemployment office in Washington State offered this program called JTPA, and I enrolled in it in the unemployment office because I wanted to go back to college. I love auto mechanics, and I was going to get a business degree, and my plan was to combine the two and become a service advisor. I mean, I could always fix things, but I didn't want to be fixing it. I didn't want to be bent over a car for 8 hours a day. So I was going to run the shop. I was going to be the service advisor, the shop manager.
You're going to be
the
owner.
So I was going to combine the two.
You're going to be the oligarch. You're going to be a big shot. Have 15 shops.
Yeah, I was going to be the guy that talked to the customer. I was going to be the customer-facing person. I was going to treat the customer with honesty. We weren't going to. I was going to manage the mechanics in a way where we weren't tie-wrapping discharge hoses of the rack and pinion system to cause a future leak. We're not going to cut with tin snips halfway through.
Well, then you would have grown up to the guy.
The plastic shot radiator fan.
You would have grown up to the
guy. We weren't
going to
do any of those diabolical things. We're going to run an honest shop.
Cash register. You'd pull the money out and say, there's not enough here. After a while. Just kidding.
Yeah, we were going to do it in way that the shop was honest.
Why didn't we open up a shop the day COVID started?
What's that?
Why didn't we open up a shop the day COVID started?
Oh, we should have.
God, yes.
Yeah, we should have. I should be repairing plumbing and doing home maintenance in New York City, because the quality of work that's been done there, man, it's pretty shoddy.
Can anybody do that?
I think I could clean up in that area in New York City. I just, honestly.
Did you have to be a licensed dude there, or can anybody go do it?
Well, I think when it comes to the interior of people's houses, for the most part, you can do whatever you want. Okay. When it involves the exterior, people are going to know. So
same thing here.
I think for the most part, if it's somebody's house, and you're honest guy, I don't think you're getting in trouble at all. I mean, there's a lot of off the books, off licensing work going on in New York City.
I'd like to be involved more.
It's probably half of it. It's probably half of that work, I would suspect.
We'd like to be involved a little more in your economic theory part, because real quick, because I want to ask you actually a very serious question. Maybe I'll do that first, and you can mull it while we go to break.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, is the Fed pouring too much money into the system causes stocks and other fixed asset stuff to go up. Now, we had issues in other countries where they, you know, the whipping boy is the Weimar Republic, but for Argentina, Turkey, Venezuela, a bunch of others into that loop, your stock market races up in your country's currency, not in somebody else's, or certainly not in relation to gold and anything else. So they seem to always lose control of that, and it blows up. Now, we here, we've been doing this, we did it in the 60s and 70s, and we saw where it got us. We've been doing it here really since 2000, and seriously since 2008. And no matter who's president, no matter how much they try and cut back on a little bit, it goes right back to the same number, and right back to the same number now. We're in the mid-fives, money supply growth, and the economy's growing maybe 1% if you're generous. And so we're talking about 4.5% inflation, markets going up, those kinds of things. Now, if you don't go Weimar and all of a sudden push, 10% into the market, which, by the way, some of Trump's policies, if he does them, he might get there. Okay, we might become Weimar, but let's say he doesn't. My question to you is, how long, if you're disciplined, can you stay, let's say it's 6% money supply growth with 1% real growth or 2%, where you constantly feed the people who own assets to the detriment of the other people? Can you do it forever? We've done it for 25 years. It's starting to reach seem like forever to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you and I go on national TV and say you can't do this anymore, they're going to say you two idiots are idiots, because we've been doing it for 25 years and everybody. By the way, I'm really fine. I've had stock in houses. I'm so fine. I can't stand it. You're telling me we want to turn this bus around? In your economic opinion, If they have maintained that sort of discipline, which I think Trump might be rocking a little bit, if they maintain that sort of discipline, how long before there's a problem? And NVIDIA's $6 a share of revenue, it's trading 170. Can it be $7 a share of revenue and trade 250? I honestly don't know, because I've been predicting that maybe we've gone too far, and yet we never seem to. I mean, Go ahead.
That's the problem with data forecasting. Right, it's like forecasting the path of a hurricane. We know it's going to hit the south, but we can't really know where that hurricane eye is going to be 5 days later. Well, so can you imagine?
We got to go to break, but let's start here. Can they do it another 10 years? That'll be the question after break, and then we'll back it down from there. When I hear your answer, SP Futures up 250, NASDAQ Futures down 8. You're right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, NoFX, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 2, Nasdaq futures down 6. We made a new record yesterday, even though we did kind of close week, even though we ended up positive. We had a turnaround during the day a little bit, so you know Joel thought that was somewhat significant. We will see. We were down when we came in this morning, and now we're you know making it back to being up here. So it doesn't look like there's any kind of a turn, at least not yet. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 289. That's 1.2%. That's a real number. FTSE down 7. Call that flat. So they're not going to DAX at all. CAC around down 65.8%. So you got Germany down a bunch, France down some, and FTSE nowhere. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 44. These guys have been quiet the last couple of days. It's down 1%. Hang Seng up 135.5. Now they've been rallying the last couple of days. Shanghai actually did 2 days in a row of decent rallies too. Up 22 points. That's 0.6%. Bonds. And these guys, the interest rates came down yesterday. Today they're steady at 4.37 to 10-year. The Bund down 1 at 2.61. Oil. Down 63 cents, 66.57. What I mentioned here was that heating oil has been going up here in the midst of the heating oil is going up and gasoline down, which is sort of weird. Because Arbob's down 2 cents this morning again, 2.11. Gold, which we had a big run up yesterday, it's down a little this morning, but now it's up back up again, 520, 3411, over 3400. Silver up 8 cents, 39.42. I don't know. I'm a little suspicious that we might get a tariff on silver. If we do, all the people I have that are long silver, we're not selling any calls against it because we don't want to get caught in case it does have a run up. Who knows if it will or not? It's like predicting, you know, the wind, like hurricane, like Al's talking about. The dollar still like very 117 euros, so not much going on there. 135 pound again, not much happening. Crypto up 2300, 119. 338, so the fake stocks are doing well. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Cubs,
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 72 degrees right now with a high of 84. Partly sunny and humid today. Tonight will be becoming cloudy with a low of 72 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 85 degrees right now with a high of 100. Partly sunny with a thunderstorm in parts of the area. Tonight will be clear with a low of 82. Traffic in Chicago, Kennedy from Monroe is 33 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 47 minutes. We're looking at 47 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 37 minutes is Eisenhower from Wolf. Dan Ryan from 95th is another 20 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 35 minutes. Talk MLB, White Sox win. White Sox beat Rays 8-3 yesterday. Cubs lose to Royals 4-12, and Diamondbacks lose to Astros 3-6. Today we got White Sox at Rays 6:35 p.m. Royals at Cubs 7:05 p.m. and lastly Astros at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Nobody wants to play those White Sox now.
That's right.
They're on their way. So hell, what? I get odd views of when I ask these questions. There's kind of reasons for it. I have probably 4, 5, 6 at least people I've known for a while that have had, you know, they're pretty much, you know, all in the market. Now their time has changed. Their life has changed some. A couple have retired and so forth. And every one of them is talking to me about finding a way to maybe protect what they have or, you know, maybe even lighten up. You can do one without the other. But, and that's what we're really good at. I mean, obviously we could just be long like everybody else, but, that's what we're really good at. But the mentality, you know, I mean, I see it when I talk about it. I see it absolutely firsthand. Well, what do you say we talk on the 15th? Okay. All of a sudden, the market has an up week. Well, see, you know what? I'm going on vacation. Why don't we try the 1st? and the simple fact is nobody's ever going to roll over and say, it's high enough, I'm going to lighten up. It didn't happen in 2000. Yeah. It's not going to happen now. As long as it's going up, the sin of leaving a little something for the next guy, of not getting the absolute top. The sin is in everybody's genes. You can't let that happen. And my grandfather used to say, don't ever be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. But now that mentality is not today, is it?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at reserves, total reserves, it's flatlined. And the Fed isn't really adding, purposely buying treasuries. It's not really adding a significant amount of treasuries. It's not purchasing a significant amount. So why are reserves going sideways? Because it's allowing the treasuries that bought, you know, a while ago to roll off, to mature.
Right.
So you would expect the reserves, the total reserves, to decline under that situation. But then when you look at lending, lending gets the money in a loan gets deposited in accounts. It gets deposited into the person's account who takes out the loan initially. But as soon as those funds are used to buy something, that money ends up in the account of the person who sold that something. So if you look at lending, lending is re-accelerating. But then you look at consumer debt or credit cards, it's kind of leveling off.
Well, you're right, Hal. Yeah. I'm absolutely not going to disagree, but
yeah,
what it is the job of the Fed.
I think the Fed's going to find it very difficult to restrain this new inflation because of what I'm talking about. It's coming. There's all these reserves in the banking system. We should see it declining, but we're not. And when you look at margin debt is what's causing, in my opinion, total loans in the U.S. economy
What do you think that? You didn't answer my question about the 10-year, but we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. What is your feel on this $2 trillion that is, in my opinion, totally made up crap in all the cryptocurrencies that people are now borrowing on that? That's almost like a mini Fed to the side.
Yeah. Well, it's competing, right?
Yeah. I got one for you here. Mm-hmm. Liberal journalist Gilbert Seldes. This is his. I call it panic to be afraid to sell at a profit lest an additional profit be lost. The panic which people keep at roulette tables, the insidious propaganda against quitting a winner, the fear of being taunted by those who held on, all worked together. It became not only a point of pride but of civic duty not to sell, as if there ever was a buyer without a seller, 1930. People don't change, do they?
Yeah, they don't. And, you know, the Fed did something really interesting in 2022. They stopped reporting or updating a series called checkable deposits and currency held by the top 20%, the top 1%. And all you have to do is go to the Fed website.
Okay, now when you say that,
Google Fred.
When you say that,
and Fed.
We're not getting it. Somebody is. They didn't stop collecting those numbers, I don't think.
Yeah, when you look at their checkable deposits and currency, the top 1%, it goes from
are you there? Where do we do it now? There.
200 billion?
We missed what you just said there. You blanked out. You blanked out, so you got to repeat what you just thought you said.
In a matter of course.
You're blanking on and off here somehow.
There?
You're here now, but you're going on and off, so you got to repeat what you just said.
Hello? Oh.
I think he's got a little bit of delay right now.
Okay. Yeah. If you look at...
You come on, you sound good, I say yes, then you blink off.
All right, what about now? Oh. Yeah, what about now?
Why don't you pop off and pop on, and then we'll see how it works.
We have bad weather.
I think the CIA is just cut off hell.
Yeah, it's. I think it's like a connection issue. You know, it just has like a lot of latency. You know, between like the dialogue.
That's what happens when you're in Virginia or Carolina, wherever the hell he's at. Yeah. Anyway, what he's trying to tell us here, I think, is that let me back up while he's off. In our system, the U.S. monetary system, people, without even maybe knowing it, can create their own money. If let's go back to people, the show that used to be on Bonanza, Virginia City Bank. If the Cartwrights sell a bunch of timber to somebody and put the money in the bank, the Virginia City Bank, now there's $100,000 in the Virginia City Bank. If Ricky goes in there and says, I want to borrow some money to plant whatever, and they lend, now say that your reserve requirement is 20%, they can lend Ricky 80 grand. But Ricky turns around and puts the 80 grand back in the bank. Okay, how much money do you now have? The 100,000 that was in there, that the Cartwrights think they have, which they do, and now Ricky has 80.
Oh, I'm back.
All right, sorry. I was explaining how in the Virginia City Bank...
Yeah, we have some bad weather.
I was explaining how in the Virginia City Bank, how people create their own money. I'm giving the long-winded version of what you just said. Where the Cartwrights put in $100,000, Ricky borrows 80, puts it back in the bank. Now you have 180 in the bank. The next guy, another 20%, he borrows 64 and puts it back in the bank. Well, the Fed's job, which really is their job, is to maintain the pool. So if things are getting better and the money supply is growing on its own, they're supposed to pull back so that the rate of growth stays at whatever the target is, 2%, 3%, although now I guess it's 6. But if it was Hal and I running it, it'd probably be 2%. We would now go in and sell bonds or whatever we could sell to pull that amount of money out of the system so it doesn't grow like a weed. And also, if two people pay their loans off at the bank, we don't want it declining that fast, so we're going to go out and buy bonds and put money into the system. So we're going to maintain the depth of the water in the pool as best we can. That's what the Fed's job is, correct, Al? Am I right on this?
I don't think they're going to be able to back out of this because they're letting treasuries roll off, yet reserves are staying constant. And if you go deeper, what's going on is it's coming from margin debt. I think, is causing the acceleration in total loans in the U.S.
And that's not to interrupt, but the stuff that's rolling off, are those the treasuries are rolling off or the mortgages are rolling off or both?
Yeah, I think they're both rolling off. They're not really adding to it. They're not going out and buying new treasuries. They're not going out and buying new securities. They're letting that stuff roll off for the most part. So you would expect total reserves to decline, but they're not. Why? Because you have probably a very wealthy group of people buying stuff on margin, and you can actually see it, I think, in the checkable deposits and currency held by the top 1%. It exploded before the financial crisis of 2007-08. The top 1% had about $12 billion collectively in checkable deposits and currency. By the beginning of 2022, that was up to $1.4 trillion. And they stopped updating the series. The Fed stopped updating that series.
Updating it to you and me, not to somebody.
It's not getting to us. Yeah. It's not getting to us. So I think that's what's fueling this. It's the lending. It's the leveraging that's going on.
If anybody looks at these numbers like I do, and if we haven't glossed everybody's eyes over already, you know what proves that you are correct, you know?
What's that?
What you just said, how what proves that you are correct, that the money is growing and they're not retarding it hard enough, is that their balance sheet is going down, which would lead you to indicate that they would be retarding the system, yet the money supply growth is going up.
And reserves are holding steady. Why?
Well, because the money is being they need to be retarding a hell of a lot more, and they're not. But they are retarding, right? It's not like they're pouring money in because the balance sheet's going down. And you said
when you let a treasury mature, you're essentially selling it, but you're not selling it to an investor. You're selling it back to treasury, right? So you're selling the treasuries. And you're not really buying any new treasuries, and you'd expect reserves to fall.
Well, the treasury is sending you the money.
Yeah, and you would expect the reserves to fall, right?
Yeah, but they're not because, like you say, between the margin loans and the crypto and God knows what else, what if all that
debt, where people with access to really inexpensive credit, they're using it to leverage these purchases. You know, Elon Musk didn't buy Twitter with cash. He used probably about 1% down.
Yeah.
Right? That's what happens in these big purchases. They use very little cash. And under a regime of inflation, a 1% purchase, a 1% cash purchase of an asset where the rest of it is leveraged or, you know, borrowed, you can get 500% returns goes up 5-10% in a year.
It's almost infinite.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what's going on here. And that's why I think this is a different story.
Okay. But
because monetary policy is not run like it was before.
All right. Can we back up and explain what you just said? Because everybody's not in one of your classes here.
Okay.
If Hal and I own two hot dog stands, and they're 100% owned. We don't have a dime in debt, right? And each hot dog stand is $1 million. I'll make it easy. And we're making 10% return, so we're making $100,000. So the next hot dog stand, somebody, a guy smart like Hal, says, "Hey, Chief, why do we want to put up another $1 million? Let's put up $100,000, and we'll borrow the $900,000 at 6%." You sit there.
Well, okay, but probably even lower than that. Well,
okay, but let's just. Yeah, okay. No, we're normal people. We're not Bezos.
We're normal people.
Yeah, we're not Bezos. We're not Musk. So we're going to pay 6% on this. Now we're returning 10. So now on 100,000, you're going to make the 10% return, which is $10,000. But now you're going to make 4% on another 90, which is 36, right? If I'm doing my math right. So now I'm making 46 on my 100 instead of 10. Because I'm borrowing the rest. That's called leverage.
Yeah, your base. It's the base of your cash, right?
But as long as your return is over the interest rate, it's the best thing in the world. But all of a sudden, next year, you start making 4% return because people don't like your hot dogs. Now you got a problem because you're paying 6 and you're making 4. So one of those things, leverage is the best thing in the world. You know, if it's working, it's also the worst thing in the world. It's sort of like, I guess sex is the best thing in the world unless your partner has a disease, right?
Well, leverage is the great thing. Yeah. Leverage is awesome in an environment of constant inflation created by a central bank. When you are going to buy something and then eventually sell it, that is the best way to take advantage of what we're describing here. Right. Especially
right, so, if, all right, answer my question.
Inflation, especially if the inflation rate it is at or exceeds the rate that you pay the bank on the interest.
Without a doubt. And why the, I mean, you look at, this is not, well, you know, yeah, I guess it is. You look at President Trump is a real estate guy. Oh, and by the way, he's from German extraction. When Weimar Republic started pumping stuff into the system to screw with France and Britain, and essentially...
Yeah, because they had to pay back their war reparation debt in...
Right, but France and Britain,
Reichmarks, right?
France and Britain didn't have an escalation clause, essentially, on CPI.
Yeah,
so they started paying it back in stuff that was worth nothing. Well, now when you pour inflation into the system, and if you happen to be a real estate farmer or whatever you were in Germany at the time, and all of a sudden you triple the money supply, and all of a sudden you're getting three times as much for your corn or whatever the hell it is, your chickens. What do you think the first thing you do? You take the money down to the bank and you pay off your mortgage with money that's worth. So when this all started, the landowners thought it was the best policy ever. They all made out like a bandit. Now, if, for instance, there's a loan on a Doral.
People on fixed incomes were on pensions that were fixed. They got punished.
All right, so if there's a loan on a Doral, say when Trump bought it, or I bought it, or Hal bought it, and all of a sudden, we've inflated the place for 10 years, and it's, by the way, it's not all Trump. It isn't at all. If we inflated the place, and now the room rates are 400 a night instead of 280, how small do you think that payment is on that mortgage compared to 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. This whole game works even better in a place like New York, where property is constrained and building has to go vertical. So the ironic thing here is Trump, I don't think it's a causation. I think it's just a correlation. Trump is the result, because he was a real estate developer in New York City. He is the what arises in the kind of financial regime that we have in the United States, right? Because his properties go up 10-20% in the New York State real estate, in the New York City real estate markets, right? So he's the product of central banking. That's what central banking
without a doubt.
In the U.S. produces. Yeah.
You and I think, I actually, we used to do some of this stuff when, not so much in Milton Friedman's class, there was another guy that was really rigorous on this stuff. We used to go through these types of things, and I'd love to do it with you someday. God, if we could clone and go somewhere. Do you guys still use chalk and blackboard, or would I be a Luddite doing that?
You're a Luddite.
Oh, yeah. If you were to do some theoretical economics and you were to talk about returns that are outliers to the risk-free returns, you would end up, you would do some kind of theoretical work where you'd say, okay, this business is riskier, it should return a little more, blah, blah, blah. And you should be able to chart almost how much different industries should return because of their risk factors, right, Al?
Yeah.
Because obviously, everybody should be able to put their money in a T-bill at 3.5%, like it's been for centuries. Well, now it's 4.5%. But if you were to do an economic study, give me an A or B or an F on this one. There should be no greater return over the long haul for a renter versus an owner of a New York City apartment. Maybe slightly skewed to the apartment owner because there's a little bit of risk there and maybe some sweat equity that has to go into the place. But the idea that a renter over a 20-year period is totally screwed and the owner made out like a bandit is totally means that your Federal Reserve did not do the job, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think it shouldn't be that way. I mean,
I don't think a central bank can do the job because...
Well, they can.
You know, their job is to do what? Job is to inflate the currency.
Well, okay, but now you're adding... By the way, I have the exact same feeling because of who's ever controlling them, that has become their job, is to prop the market up. But I don't think in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that was their job, or certainly in the 50s.
Well, you know, Arthur Burns was in the Milton Friedman camp, and he ended up being an inflationist. Yeah, I don't think he adhered, or he did not adhere himself to Milton Friedman's rules. Because, like, you know, they thought they would.
But the Milton Friedman's rule number one was, when you start inflation up, it feels so good. That's why you can't ever start it up. But do you think that?
Oh yeah.
Do you think that in 1968 when we went off to Bretton Woods on the?
Well, it's like heroin. Yeah. I've never heroin.
I've never had, but I'm not going to try anything like that. Yeah. But what happens is, and we had trouble. Vietnam was causing a problem. Deficits were running. How do we finance Vietnam? Okay, well, we get off the gold standard, right? So we don't have De Gaulle showing up with ships full of $100 bills demanding gold, because that was kind of a pain in the ass, right? Yeah. So now we decide we're going to expand the money supply. So now we can pay off this debt a hell of a lot easier, right? Because the money's not worth as much.
Yeah, kind of like, it always works. I mean, I think people learn lessons of history. So we basically
employed a very moderate.
Yeah, we back in the 1970s when we're paying off the war debts that we were accumulating, we were kind of employing a very modest version of what the Weimar Republic did.
Yes.
To pay off its war debt to France and England.
Right.
And in both cases, guess who got screwed? France, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the difference is it's not like I memorized a chart. I think early on in that, you saw the market going up almost every day. I remember when I was in high school, it seemed like it went up every day. And this was the greatest thing ever, 68, 69. Yeah. All of a sudden, you had the price shock from the oil embargo. But inflation was already creeping anyway, but then they blamed inflation all over. It was those dirty Arabs, right? They're the ones that caused it by raising the price of oil and embargoing stuff because of the Israeli war and so forth. And there was a little guy from Chicago, Milton Friedman, was all over the Treasury saying, it's not the oil embargo, it's not this, it's not that, it's you guys putting all this money in. It just takes a while to percolate its way through and cause, you know, a problem with, just like, I mean, because consumer price thing, for whatever reason, Al, has a 2 or 3 or 4 month lag. Just like right now, how many people are stomping up and down saying the tariffs didn't do anything in the last month's CPI? No, they didn't. It won't show up till September, maybe October. And when it does, it might be an eye-opener.
Here's the real danger of the tariff. The real danger of the tariff is placed on individual firms. And the individual firms that want to sell in the United States, they kind of have to eat it. And so what happens is, the marginal firm, the firm with the smallest profit margins, is going to be destroyed by the tariff. Meanwhile, the larger firms in China that have bigger margins, they're going to be able to absorb that tariff. And what's going to end up happening is, it's going to eliminate the commerce. It's going to eliminate the production from these sub-marginal and marginal firms in the foreign country. And so what you're going to see is those foreign countries' GDPs drop off.
Is that a good thing?
No, it's not, because what ends up happening in the long run is, if there's fewer suppliers and there's fewer goods being exported to a country like the United States, that has a tendency to do what to prices? There's less supply, right?
Yeah.
So there's less supply. It does bring down prices.
Right. Oh, or less it supply. Raises prices.
So when these firms are dropping off, when these marginal firms and sub-marginal firms with the really tiny margins drop out of this particular market, supply declines, and that pushes the prices up. So that's the long-run danger of tariffs. As long as the tariff rate is small, I don't think that happens. But if you get it to like 40, 50% tariffs, you're going to eliminate a lot of these small firms, and it ends up being monopolizing in the foreign country we're buying goods for.
Well, it ends up being monopolizing here.
An environment of fewer firms.
It's just a horrible economic idea on every end. The only time.
Yeah, and it's going to eventually push up.
Well, plus if you throw them all into a recession,
I don't think you're going to get the immediate.
Yeah. No, it won't be immediate. All right, you've dodged it so long. How many more years can these guys do this? I asked you before the break. How long can we be the mini Weimar? 6% money supply growth, 1% real growth. How many years can more we can do that before everybody either chokes on it or revolts or grabs a gun or what?
Yeah.
How many more years can they do it?
What I'm hoping is that these countries that haven't signed.
No, I'm talking about just here.
I'm hoping that they're seeing. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I don't think it can last, right? But there's a lot of what ifs in that statement, but it's kind of hard.
It's 25 years. We've been mini Weimar for 25 years.
The interesting thing is, the reason why I'm in the butt out school, I'm not in the Keynesian school, is because all the rigidities that are put in place to make prices and wages sticky, all markets still want to work. Markets still want to clear. And when you restrict an economy with all kinds of rules and restrictions, markets still work, but they work in illegal ways. They become black markets. Black markets are just markets trying to free themselves of government restrictions and rules.
Well, you know, I'll dash over a minute here, but the criticism of the Keynesian idea that you got from the monetarist, the University of Chicago, really was not a criticism of the theory. It was a criticism of the execution. Because the idea that, I mean, Keynes' thing is way more complicated than this, but they're basically, one of the tenets that affects us, Hal, is that can we essentially manage the business cycle out of an economy? Because in any economy, seemingly known to man, it's going good, everybody invests too much, all of a sudden they overinvest, somebody has a problem, then you go back down to where some people get in trouble or some layoffs, but then too many places fold and new places show up, and then you go right back up again. And generally, businesses have a cycle, right? You know, and the idea of Keynesians were, well, you know, if we could, when we see things going too good, we're going to tax a little more and drag some money out of there. We're going to take off the peaks and the valleys. And we can do that through, micromanaging the economy. Guys like McNamara and people like that thought they could do that. But in practice, what Milton Friedman always used to say is, if you had somebody omniscient that would say, starting to accelerate a little bit, if you could put it on a Tuesday, you recognize this, on Wednesday you could increase the tax by 1% or something, where you could retard that top. And then as soon as it started going the other way, the guy who was omniscient, the smart guy, Solomon, would reverse the tax and go the other way. He goes, you probably could pull it off. The problem is...
Yeah, but the omniscient person doing that, the all-intelligent being doing that, ultimately is going to be replaced by a guy like Jeffrey Epstein,
system. He was nicer than that. He would replace it, but when it became so obvious that the economy was running too hot, by the time you started to pull it back, if Congress realized this and they passed the bill tomorrow, but the tax increase came in January of 27 or something, which is what they would do. You end up increasing the taxes when the economy was already on the way down.
That's why it doesn't work. It's really hard.
You ended up making the tops and the bottoms higher and lower because you couldn't move fast enough. So you're better off doing nothing, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so another thing about the Keynesian model is it is necessary. It's a butt-in school, right?
Yeah.
Way to manage the macro economy, but it works under the assumption that government has made wages and prices sticky.
Well, it also
with its rules and regulations.
It also assumes they're straight, which you and I would never do. Yeah. Well, but take care. Good stuff. We'll talk next Tuesday, if not sooner. S&P futures down 370. They're up 350. NASDAQ futures down 4. I haven't seen either of us in any of us in any of these creepy tapes. Have you?
Who?
I haven't seen either of us in any of these creepy tapes.
I'm not in that club.
Oh God, no. Ricky, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.